Om Shanti. Now for 5 minutes, just 5 minutes, you can share with someone what came up from these questions for you. What anything significant or anything stimulating. You look all very quiet. Something wrong? No. No, it's good. Either something wrong or has gone very deep, deep. But outside is not always so quiet. Okay, so 5 minutes, just share an insight or an understanding. Okay, Om Shanti. So, I'm sure we all got some insights or some stimulation from the questions, and what our relationship with Brahma Baba also means for us personally, because the relationship with God, the relationship with Brahma Baba, and then the relationship with Bab Dada. All together, both together. But anyway, I was thinking that now maybe is a good time if you would like some clarifications of some of the things, not necessarily only of today, but of the 2 days, some clarification of an aspect of Baba or a particular dharana in relationship with Baba or whatever. Also, I was asked about just now about what is the difference? Is there a difference between mercy and compassion? Because often we are told God has mercy. It depends on the tradition. When they speak of Buddha, they speak of Karuna Buddha, the compassionate Buddha. They do say God also in the other, Hinduism and Christianity, that God is compassionate. They say that as well. But they use the word mercy more. All these things are very close together. But what I tend to think is that mercy is just that the person is absolutely helpless, and you have to lift them up. And it does have a bit of the idea of pity in it. And mercy is like a once-off. Like, you're merciful, and you do something at that particular time. Compassionate is it's something that is sustaining. Compassion is actually you're tuning in to the needs of the other. And tuning into the needs of the other, you're able to serve them to get back on balance again. Whereas, mercy, you just give something to help them at that moment. Compassion is very, very deep aspect also of love. Mercy also, but compassion are much more more powerful, more deeper aspect of love. So when someone has compassion, they don't feel sorry for the person. In mercy, you may feel very sorry also for the person, but in compassion, you're not feeling sorry, you're feeling that you can assist, you can aid the individual to get back on their feet again. And this is compassion. I mean, that's how I've understood it. Somebody also asked about grace. What's grace? I suppose it's, for me, it's like sakash, Grace is the unconditional gift of empowerment from God. That with that power, the soul is able to do anything it wishes. It's able to be whatever it wishes to be. It's a gift. No strings attached. This is Sakash, this is grace. And it is the power of grace, or the power of Sakash, that enables the soul to lift up. It's able through that power, that unconditional power, whether in the form of love, whether it is in the form of respect or joy, that it enables the soul to lift up and break the gravity that's keeping it down. Because everything is, you know, there's a lot of gravity. I remember reading something. I remember reading a very famous writer once. She died in the Second World War, and she started off as a socialist and not really believing in God or these type of things. But she gradually changed in the struggle that she was having. Very brilliant French woman. Her name was Simone Weil, and she made once a statement. She says, you know, the Renaissance, something like this, I'm not sure exactly these words, but the humanists were correct to say that love and equality and justice and knowledge were the highest goals within the human beings. But they were wrong when they thought that this can be done without the grace of God. Well, something like that. I'm sort of paraphrasing it, but it really struck something in me. I said, yes, humanism, when it came up in the Renaissance, had all these very wonderful reawakening of dignity, of the individual, all of that. But Baba, actually, at the confluence, is saying, yes, all these things, he even says, all these things are very true, but you can't get it without purity. And for purity, for the soul to reawaken its purity, it needs, he says, remembrance, but in that remembrance, there is the Sakash and the grace that enables the soul to dissolve the bonds of karma, that is, the gravity that keeps pulling it back and back to situations of suffering, on whatever level that suffering may be. Any other questions? Yes, the question was, I spoke about artificiality, superficiality, formula thinking, and if I believe fake it till you make it. No. Huh? Act as if. You see, I've heard it, and I've heard even Brahmins and even older Brahmins say it, but personally, you do a bit at a time. You don't fake, I am super soul conscious. I'm an angel because I'm wearing white. You know, I can't fake it like that. I can move in small steps. Because, you know, we're all talking about, you know, on one hand, fake it till you make it. It's a very American expression. When I was there, I heard it a lot. And on the other hand, authenticity, transparency, truth, it doesn't go together. It's better to say, isn't it? I'm on the journey, yes, and I'm experiencing soul conscious. Sometimes I slip out of it, sometimes this. Because if, you know, I just instinctively, you know, I just don't believe that that can work. Because, you know, you fake it till you make it. I mean, you will start to deceive yourself that you're there. And already we do have enough problems with self-deception. We don't need another one. You know? And so it's always much, much more healthy, much more healthy to be, you know, honest with my own self. And because that's the sign of progress. For me, it's that. They can't hear. Where's the mic?
Question. Can you hear me? The reason I was asking the question is really in relation to the topic of the relationships with God. Because if you're not connecting with a certain relationship, how do you make that leap to go into experiencing it? Because you can't jump to the contemplative part right away. Exactly. So how do you suggest?
But that's why that goes on, this goes off. But this is exactly the whole point of reflective thinking. That's why we mention that. You know, if I'm here and I can't jump, the worst thing is to fake that I have jumped, and it's clear to others I haven't, but even to my own self. So that's the whole point. That's the whole point of reflective thought. The point of reflective thought is, in order to, you know, get that strength to move, I have to start to reflect on things. This is why the value of questions to the self. And formula, you know, the formula in itself is a truth. The problem is not the formula. The problem is people are faking it all the time. They're faking it. Yes, I have equal vision, but it's not. You know, I'm loving, but, you know, in practical, I'm not. So that's the problem with the formula thinking. Not that that's what we said before, that the formula in itself may be extremely accurate, but it's not lived. And I have to be aware and not be in that self-deception, because if I'm not experiencing, I definitely will be in self-deception. And a person who's in self-deception, he always has the characteristic of doubt. They will always doubt themselves, whether they really had an experience. They'll doubt other people. It, you know, one is the domino effect. You know, one would, on a positive way, it's a domino effect, but in a negative way as well. So to kick start again, I need to go back to basics and make my inquiry and research. And this is it's the beauty of being a human being at the confluence, is, and from the Copper Age actually, even inquiry. It's the spirit of inquiry, not to just smash things for the sake of smashing them, but really estimating their relevance in my life, the meaningfulness that they have, and if that's what I really want. And how do I understand God? I mean, I think one always revises and refines. You know, being artificial means may not have started artificial, but gradually I get there because I became complacent. It was just very different from contentment, and people mix up the two. It's very easy to mix up being complacent and being content. A complacent, I've reached there, I'm there. Om Shanti. 10 times, and I'm there. And, you know, people say, you know, Baba this, Baba that, Baba that. You know, I mean, it's just the self-deception of having reached. It's not that I haven't attained something. Definitely I've attained something. But complacence means then the comfortable, passive position. Whereas contentment, I'm content with what I am. I've reached that core of excellence inside myself, but I am aware, I'm also aware, there are artificial things, there are, you know, things that I need to refine on a daily basis. But you see, when you have an inner contentment, what hits you as a test or as a challenge will never penetrate you and make you fall apart. Because, you know, a complacent person or a person who fakes things is very fragile. Very fragile. And, devolves. Is always devolving. And when a person devolves, they do not have experiences that give them the power. They actually become more abstract in words and in ideas. And people who are, especially in spirituality, when people are abstract with opinions and ideas, this is where they do become, you know, dogmatic and fanatic. Even in Lockhick, you know, the Muslim or the Christian, you know, the Spanish Inquisition, the Jihad and all of this, These people had no link whatsoever, really, to the truth or the spirit of that spiritual tradition. You know, this is what you usually find. You know, they've camouflaged their personal ambitions, their personal needs, have camouflaged it with the word God. So therefore, I'm okay. I'm right. I'm justified in my violence. They're faking it, and they're not aware they're faking it. So, reflection. I mean, and it's a good thing to be able to be willing to even challenge my own self and my own perspective. Not that I'm skeptical, but I know there needs to be always more depth. I don't doubt I'm a soul. I don't doubt this is a time of confluence. I don't doubt Barbara's working. This is a very firm faith. But there's always a depth, deeper way you can go into it. You mustn't become complacent. And complacency can really also come from the ego of, I know, and I know enough. There's always things to learn, and there's always things to change, and this will keep the soul fresh, and it will keep the soul freshness. You know that I'm authentic to myself. You know, and you don't have to be perfect to be authentic. I mean, people sometimes they get a bit obsessed with this word, authentic and real and natural and all that. It's a little bit sometimes over the top. But I find the people who do that the most are the ones who do not recognize the artificiality in themselves. They'll recognize it in others very easily and point it out, but in themselves they don't realize it. That's why they're a little obsessed with it. You know, wherever you are obsessed, see, whatever you complain about most is what you are missing. You know? If I can't stand this defect in you, I can't stand it. See, I may see there's that defect, but okay. You know, observe, I see it. You know, I realize I have my own, you know, it's okay. But if I get passionate about your defect, you know, it's terrible, it's, you know, it's horrible for the center, it's, you know, if I get this, it's always been... I mean, I've learned this through observation, either in myself or, you know, in others. And I find when I get too passionate about something, I'm off track. I may not know how I'm off track, but I'm off track because there's a violence in it and a self-righteousness in it. You know what I mean? This is what I find. And so, when somebody's complaining to me very much about another student, I mean, you know, I can tell the difference. A person's making an observation and they want to find a solution. That is understandable. But when they become obsessed with the defect of somebody else and they want to my, you know, alliance in it, you know, and I realize the pattern is, you know, when it's over and over again, I said, you know, if the person was telling me once this whole story, I said, you know something? And she said, what? She said, you know, I have the feeling you're talking about yourself. Of course, yeah, it's okay. And she said, I don't think so. Because I don't do it like that. I just say, look, you know, who are you talking about? I said, I think you're talking about yourself. Yeah? But you didn't, you know, I think that's just start to justify. No, I'm talking about that person. I said, but it's too strong. It's too much. Why does it bother you so much? Why so much? This is artificiality. And I mean, you're talking about they're not true, they're not genuine, but I said, the way you're speaking, neither are you. I mean, what Baba's talking, teaching me about compassion. Baba's teaching me about acceptance. And Baba also telling me to look at myself. I'm not perfect. I've done so many wrong things, you know. I can't play judge. Artificial people will play judge. You can't. Even Baba doesn't play judge. He always says, Dharmaraj and me are separate. You know, he doesn't say, I'm Dharmaraj. He says, Dharmaraj is with me. But he never says, I am. Because Dharmaraj is a code. That's what, anyway, I won't go into that. Thanks for the question. So,
Shanti, can you give us an example, practical, maybe long, long time ago, when you were in a situation and you were just a little bit blind in front of this situation, how could you put light on the situation?
Yes.
Practical, if you remember one long time.
Well, I think there
were
many. There's so many, I don't remember which one. But there's a general pattern that you follow. For example, the pattern of we get very stuck in shortcomings or defects of others. And I think one of the things maybe I had too was the sense of wanting to keep things on the right track, but then feeling responsible for it. But what happens is, when you don't let Baba into the picture, when you don't let drama also into the picture, you start to become over-responsible. And that over-responsibility tends to make you controlling. And it's a very fine balance you have to get between to what point you are responsible and to the point where you actually let go and let things happen. And that, you know, when you're young in Gyan, and you know, we had no trainings at that time, you know. We have teacher's classes now and how to do this course, how to do this. In those days, you were just, you know, put on the field and that was it. And so you had to learn things on the spot, you know. But of course, for this soul, always that focal point was God and God's love and learning. These were the focal points. The yoga, and not just knowledge, but the understanding of knowledge when applied. These two things. Because sometimes people say just knowledge, but it's not enough knowledge. You've got the understanding that can only come when you apply it. So dana, I remember, you know, yoga and dana were the most important things. And then if you were open enough, you could start to see patterns. And we all can see that. You know, if many people are complaining to me about something, it's a signal to me. One or two is okay, you know. We all have our little karmic accounts with one or two people. But, you know, if it's 10 people, if it's 20 people, you know, I should start to pay a little attention to this. And so if many people are complaining about something about you, then, you know, you have to pay attention. Or, see, you just don't care. You don't listen. Because the ego of being right. You know, ego comes up in two things very strong. Justice and being right, or the facade of truth. The ego comes up a lot in these things. Truth, justice, and being right. So be very careful. Justice. It's fair, it's not fair. It's right, it's not right. You know? And so you can see the pattern in yourself. And if I have the humility and the desire to progress, you know, the desire deep inside to be truly free. Truly free, you know, I won't want these blind spots, because they always put put you, you know, in conflict somewhere. So it's not even some, you know, okay, that thing of over-responsible and controlling is something, you know, it is specific and it happens. But whatever we see a pattern repeating in ourselves, then you step back and you make a decision that you don't want this in your life. You don't want this in your consciousness. Because you want to be, I want to be free. And I really, really want to understand what compassion is. Understand what loving is, you know, whatever it is, whatever the aim is. And then with also Baba and yoga, you know, the power comes to transform certain things. But it is, you know, when they say know yourself, it's not only I'm a soul, it's also, Baba said, the type of soul you are, on the positive side but also on the cleansing side. I won't say bad side. Cleansing side. The cleansing side. You know, and to be very careful of these things, you know. The wrong type of individuality, the wrong, you know, truth, justice, fair, you know, what's fair, what's right. You know, I don't, you know, I can know to a point, but, you know, I don't know all the threads of karma that they're involved in with a person, in a place. And I remember Daddy Janki once was saying to us this, because something happened, you know, in the Middle East, you know. And anyway, to cut a long story short, because somebody was saying, well, we won't send light to this country because they did this, and another said because they did that. Oh yeah, this is what. In a spiritual context, is what they were saying, and I mean, they were guests, they were not Brahmins, but still close souls. And so Daddy was saying, you know, if you are in that angelic state, you go up above everything. You go up above right, wrong, just, unjust, oppressor, victim. You don't know the karmic patterns. You go up above, be with Baba, and you send light to everybody. You send light to every soul. Because, you know, if you start to persecute an oppressor, they're going to get worse. You need to be able to educate the one who oppresses. You need to tell the victim to find support in themselves and have their own self-respect to face the things. Because this is, I think, the thing of mercy. Mercy is, you know, the pity where you go towards the victim. Compassion, I would think, you would embrace both, the oppressor and the victim, because they both need help, but in different ways. So this is why it means to have a higher level of consciousness. This is what it means. I mean, and it takes a lot of inner attention to really start to do it. But this is when Baba, you know, Baba says, take your intellect beyond. Do I understand the significance of that? Or it's too abstract? It's, you know, if I understand it, it's not that abstract at all. Is it going beyond, yes, with the Father, in another way of seeing things, a much, much more compassionate and benevolent way of seeing the situations at the drama at the moment. You don't take sides. A lighthouse gives light to any ship that comes across its way. An angel must give light to anyone that comes across its way. So, you know, and how do we change to get to that level of consciousness? It's daily. It's daily steps, daily little steps. Today, you know, for example, somebody's doing something, you, for one reason or another, other days you could, didn't matter, but today, let's say, you are supremely irritated. Supremely irritated. And you've never been that irritated to this extent before, but today, with this person, it's supreme irritation. This is at that point, I have to really be the apprentice. And I say, you know, stop. And another voice will say, but it's not fair. But they deserve that. You know, a little voice comes up. Yeah. Huh? but I'm the soul, and I know that if I get to the same level and give the same type of things, or I'm violent in my reaction, nothing is going to improve. Nothing is going to improve. So at that point, you know, I have to be able to take a step back from myself and you know, put myself on right track. Because otherwise, it just keeps going on and on and on. And when things keep going on and on and on, the imagination follows. And it starts to imagine things and makes things much bigger. There's no essence. So, this is the importance of being able to be detached from the self and step back. And it's if I want to change negative patterns, it's up to me. And the motivation to change negative patterns is my own sense of dignity and my own sense of destiny for something higher. That is the real motivation. It's not, you know, reward or punishment or this. No, it will not be this. It will be, I want to be true to myself now. It's not that because I'll go to golden age or I won't, or this or that, or I'll be a sweeper or I'll be a this. These things are irrelevant. Pure is pure and it's now, you know. And is this what I want? Because I think we all want to have more quality relating, whether it's to people, to nature, to the self, to the body. We want a quality connection. So that means the things that are not of quality have to go. They have to go. So how? Not hammering, but checking. Stepping back. You know, learning to surrender it, to give it away. And experiencing the alternative. You see, if I experience the alternative, then I can dissolve that. Also, I can recognize it. If you don't experience the alternative pure or the positive, then I may not recognize. And I get, you know, people get caught up in this is true and it's false and this is just and it's unjust, you know. But, you know, if I start to become violent myself on the basis of it's true, so I justify my anger, I've lost the game. You know, in English they say two wrongs do not make a right. Om Shanti, or any other question? Saying spiritual maturity. Well, it's really all the things that have been said. And I think that actually, as a person becomes spiritually mature, one of the characters, I mean, there are different characteristics, but one of them is they are not petty. They get out of being petty. They get out of trivial things. They get out of narcissistic emotions. You know, a spiritually mature person doesn't have these narcissistic emotions that revolve always around I know and I think, and the big one, you know, the big one, I feel. You know, I feel this person is like that. I feel that. You know, good, but that's not the point. The point is, even if you feel something negative or something not true, you give the opposite. That's spiritual maturity. If I'm immature, I just am intoxicated with myself that I can feel what's wrong. Yeah, that's immaturity. Maturity is, you know, I try to turn it around and, you know, offer through vibration, through vision, the positive thing, the pure thing. So then things heal. Spiritual maturity is I will always seek reconciliation. I will seek healing. I will seek complimenting. I will seek
I will seek something that brings something to a situation or person to something higher. But I need a lot of inner strength for that. Theoretically it sounds good, but then when the situation comes, I've got to have that strength inside. And really that strength is a part, the strength to do all that is a part of compassion and love. And also I would say that's also truth too. Truth is not to be right. Truth is to heal and reconcile. It's not to be right. Truth you can't argue for. Truth is a state of being. It's not a method. It's not. You can't argue truth. Knowledge you can argue, but truth is different. This is spiritual maturity. And again, a spiritually mature person is very big-hearted, very generous to themselves too. They won't create. They won't fake it till you make it. Spiritual maturity is you will never do that. Immaturity is you'll say yes, this is the way, but maturity is no, it's not the way. Okay, yes. I'll repeat it. How can I recognize my uniqueness? Just do. You know, I mean, see, this is the whole thing. Of course there are those who defame and criticize, but there are also lots of people who appreciate what you are. They will express that. This is like a blessing from others. A blessing of others, they appreciate, they are grateful for what you are and what you give. And I should be able to accept that. Also to appreciate how God sees me, how Dharma sees me. And I think that's very important. The problem with unique, you know, some people go to extremes. They think they are nothing. You know, this is sometimes the Christian way. You know, they think it's a virtue to say, I'm nothing. I'm nothing. You know, I'm sure you must have come across this. But, you know, that's a way to really destroy and damage. But other people have another thing, you know. They may have a talent. They may have a speciality. They may have a uniqueness. But they just start to develop a lot of ego about it. And when that ego is there, the purity of it is lost. You can never develop or express your uniqueness naturally if you have a false humility and you crush yourself in the name of whatever. Or the other way, where you're so attached to yourself and you want to confirm yourself all the time, but it's too narcissistic, it's too egoistic. And that's the way people also lose their uniqueness. Uniqueness is clear and it harmonizes with the uniqueness of others. I think a truly unique person truly respects the uniqueness of others, complements with them, and can get the task done. You've got to give space. A unique soul will give space to others' uniqueness. They won't be self-absorbed. And so you get this sometimes, you know, in more Western and free-thinking country where the idea of individuality is actually very good. I mean, I remember growing up in Australia and I found it a relief because the Mediterranean of that generation was so, you know, closed, you know, what other people think all the time, you know, the money you get in your job, you know, I mean, all these types of things. And it was, you know, normal for them. But, you know, growing up in Australia, then these things didn't matter. It's what you were as a person. The negative side of that is that there can be a narcissistic individuality that is produced where there's no tolerance, no patience, very little respectfulness, you know. it can devolve to that. You know, the positive side of the family thing is that there's always support, there's always warmth, there can always be acceptance. But the negative side is extremely controlling, and you have to comply. So I think a unique soul will always recognize the speciality of all things. They recognize speciality of all things, not only themselves. And you know, when you recognize the specialities of others, your own speciality emerges more and more. You know how blessings increase? Your blessing increases in its quality when you give it away. Yes, you give away, you know. Otherwise, you see, if I have this, for example, I have the speciality of cooperating, and if I start to think, yes, nobody can cooperate like I can, I can get people to cooperate. Yeah, maybe I do have that speciality, but it starts to become impure. Whereas actually what I should do is show others how to cooperate, and then they can do it also. It's not just mine. So uniqueness multiplies when you share it. Okay. Okay. Om Shanti. So so it's been a nice 3 days. So thanks very much for the opportunity to share Baba's knowledge, and I hope that we can understand Baba time and, you know, what he's giving us more deeply and more personally. So it's good in Madhuban, isn't it, we can get together from all different places together. We all belong to that one family and share, because usually we would never see each other, would we? I mean, very often that happens. So here we can all see each other. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. So I'd like to take this opportunity on behalf of everyone and the planning team as well. Big thank you to Brother Anthony for giving your time, and let's give a big hand. I think one of our key objectives was, we do get classes in Madhuban, but we don't always have the opportunity to really go deep in one subject, and I think that's what we really appreciated of these last 3 days. And one of the comments I've heard is that often we hear about the importance of yoga and the value of yoga and the stages of yoga, but never the question of the how-to. And I think this is what many people appreciated, just offering the insight and the step-by-step process on making it more real and more practical for all of us. So a big, big thank you, Brother Anthony. Okay. And before we end up with yoga, just those who haven't filled in a feedback form, please, we'd like your feedback, because it's going to guide us as we move along for the rest of the season.
मगर तुम न कहे